Welcome to Diversity Discourse, the official podcast of Minority Business Entrepreneur Magazine. This is the space where we create meaningful conversations around supplier diversity, diverse business entrepreneurship, and diversity, equity, and inclusion with some of the industry's most engaging and successful entrepreneurs, thought leaders, and experts. Now, let's get started with today's episode.
Hello, I'm Tanya Isley, the publisher of MBE Magazine, and welcome to Diversity Discourse. We have a great conversation for you today because I'm talking with Jacqueline Moore, the founder, CEO, and chairman of CMR Ignite, which is Wisconsin's largest Black-owned communications agency. Listen, this agency is racking up the accomplishments. This year, they're celebrating 28 years of business, and Jackie was recently awarded the Diversity in Business Lifetime Achievement Award by the Milwaukee Business Journal. And the firm has been named one of the fastest growing private companies by Inc. 5000 for the past 3 years. So be prepared to gain some insights into how Jackie has maintained excellence for almost 30 years, as well as her thoughts on bringing more minority-owned agencies into the advertising and marketing supplier diversity pipeline. All right, let's get started. Thank you, Jackie, for joining me today on Diversity Discourse. And I just want to jump right into things. You founded your agency back in 95, and your mission has been to develop innovative cross-cultural marketing campaigns that lead to real positive change. Why did you choose cause marketing as a focus for your company?
Just to be straight up honest, we didn't start as cause marketing. Okay. We started as a marketing communications company back in 1995. That was a long time ago, believe it or not. 28 years is kind of a long time ago. But really, when we started the organization, you know, we wanted to provide an opportunity for organizations to basically be able to attract and retain an audience of color. We recognized that there were very few firms that could do that, that knew how to do that. And so that was one of the reasons for our being, as we saw a void in the marketplace where, you know, people weren't talking to us. They were talking all around us. And so basically, we started there, but we evolved into cause marketing. And part of the evolution has been because we recognize that as society has changed, our audiences have changed, and now they realize and recognize and really want the companies that they support to stand for something. Mm-hmm. It's no longer, I just buy your product blindly because you got the best product or you got the best tennis shoe or you got the best whatever. I want you to stand for something, and I want you to stand for something that's bigger than the greater, that, you know, that contributes to the greater good. And so from that standpoint, we saw that, we recognized that, and we said, you know what, that's what we do too. We want to make sure that that the organizations that we serve stand for something. And so that's how we moved into really cause marketing, which is, you know, really about, what do you stand for? How do we communicate what you stand for, which does ultimately still drive sales? Everybody doesn't get it yet. You know, they don't realize that oftentimes my decision to buy your product versus another person's product is whether or not you really align with the things that I believe in as good for the social, for the overall social environment.
And in addition to that, your staff is very diverse. What is it? 70% Black, Indigenous, of people of color, LGBTQ, yes, and people with disabilities. Now, yes, is that intentional?
It is. And even more so now than it has been even in the past. But we've always been, you know, just by the nature of who we are, who your CEO is, who your president was, you know, we were able to attract and retain people of color. And because of that, you know, we've continued with that. That is one of the cultural things that we believe in very strongly. We look like what America looks like. And unfortunately, many organizations do not do that because we stand for more than just profits. You know, it's not just about how much money can we make and it doesn't matter. It does matter who we have on our staff. People of color in particular, are much more comfortable in an environment where there are other people of color. And so we know that. So we know that we get the best from our staff members, from our employees, because they are now not in an environment where they're being judged on, well, you're the only person here that can answer this question about why something happened, either, you know, with someone of color or a person with a disability or whatever. You know, you're the expert in the whole company. And I'm just like, don't put that pressure on people. That is totally unfair. And so because we reflect what America looks like, we have been very intentional in continuing to do that. And not only do our employees enjoy that and our staff members, but our clients appreciate it, because now they know that we know how to represent whatever audience it is that they seek to attract.
And that is huge. That is really huge. And I will say this, I used to be a supply diversity consultant for advertising, marketing, and media companies. And at that time, and still now, you know that that industry that you're part of has been challenged in terms of its diversity. And I think last year, ANA, the Association of National Advertisers, reported that there has been an increase in the ethnic diversity of marketing teams of their member companies. And I think now it's at 32% from up from like 30.8% or 31% a year ago.
Okay.
That's still a long ways to go.
Exactly.
Still a long ways to go. And on the supply diversity side, you look at the general market agencies, they don't really reflect their audience or who they're trying to sell to. I think ANA found that like 56% of marketing executives are interested in supporting diverse suppliers, but only 38% of the suppliers report getting like an increased investment from those communities. What do you think in terms of supply diversity should happen for more diverse firms to get more opportunities? Because it at this point, it is still a challenge, and you would think that we would be further along in that.
So what's wrong with that picture, right? But I think there are a couple of things that, you know, that could take place that I think maybe don't take place now. One, and let's talk on the supplier diversity side first. So from a supplier diversity side, oftentimes in our client environments, what we found is that supplier diversity is kind of relegated to make sure they're certified, make sure they're legitimate, make sure they have this. And what are the numbers? Do you have 500 this year? And you measured on, you went from 500 to 600. And to me, that's just checking the boxes. So that just says, you know, now your job, you know, the way you're measured in your worth, your value for that organization is how many check boxes can you, how many tick box can you get? That does not drive supplier diversity. So to me, if we really wanted to see some change there, you make those individuals responsible for budget. You give them the opportunity to actually do the job, to issue contracts, to be a part of that process, other than checking the box. I have a very good friend who I remember some years ago would call me, and he was over supplier diversity here in Milwaukee. And he would say, you know, you need to get certified, your certification's up. And finally, I told him, I said, I'm not certifying anymore for your organization. One, I never get an opportunity to bid on anything within your company. And two, I've never been awarded any business out of your company. Mm-hmm. So from that standpoint, I said, you are taking my valuable time and you want me to do this exercise as I saw it so that I can be in your database. I am just not interested in that. And so from that standpoint, you know, he had to laugh. I had to just say it like it was, because, you know, as I went on, I have to value my time and my effort.
Absolutely.
On the other side of the coin, if marketing executives want this to happen, then they have to be involved. They have to make it happen. And they can make it happen. They can say, you know, I want to make sure that we are looking at a diverse group of suppliers. If it doesn't happen and it isn't deliberate, it will just not happen organically. It is not human nature for people to change their habits around or their biases around who they hire, who they bring in, whatever. And it is really difficult to break into that arena. And so from that standpoint, you know, they are viewed oftentimes as gatekeepers. And so, you know, from that standpoint, it comes across as they do the, let me check all the boxes to make sure you're legit, but you don't get any further than there. And like I said, if you really want it to happen, it has to come from the top. It really does. It does not change. The reason that we are part of who we are from a cultural standpoint of our BIPOC that you talked about, it's deliberate. I have stated, this is what I'm looking for. I look to do business with people of color that look like me, you know, and so I make a real effort to make sure that whenever we're doing something. Now, if we can't find people of color that can do the job, you know, to the quality standards that we want, that's a different story. But we always try to look for those individuals first.
That's good to know. You know, and I will add this in terms of what they should do or could do is investing in these companies. Like you said, there are a lot of check the boxes, check off this box, check off that. You meet people at a conference or somewhere, they'll tell you, go register in our portal. Well, that portal is a black hole. I say it all the time. It's a black hole because you go in and nobody hears from you again and you don't hear from them. So invest in these companies. Just instead of just bring them in, okay, I'm going to give you this amount. I'm going to do this. What are you doing to increase their revenue year after year? Bring them in, keep them there, mentor them, you know, help them grow and keep bringing in more people. You can expand that business.
Right. It's really and they should be measured on revenue dollars. You know, how much are we spending with this versus how many are certified? I'm like, how many are certified is not a good measurement tool because, like you said, it's the black hole. You just go in there. And again, that's why, you know, it you pop up and it says, oh, your certification's due. You know, you need to go in and do this again. And finally, for, you know, individuals like me, you just kind of get tired of that exercise that you're doing every year, every 3 years or whatever the deadline is in doing that. And at some point you just kind of go, why am I wasting my time with this? I'm not getting the opportunities that I'm looking for. You know, I'm not having the opportunity to bring to your organization the value that I could. So therefore I will just go someplace else and do it there. So
you can look at what I'm doing and see that there's value in me. So they will invest and take the time to get to know me and we'll work together. I call it partnering. Absolutely. So you were recently awarded the Diversity in Business Lifetime Achievement Award by the Milwaukee Business Journal. And your firm has been named one of the fastest growing private companies by Inc. 5000 for the past 3 years. Now, I want to go back just a little bit and have you tell us about your journey from the beginning to getting all of these accolades.
Oh my gosh. It has been a journey of 28 years. 1995 is when I started the organization. I started it by myself, solo, had an idea, saw a need. I do have a marketing background, so I was able to strategically look to see where are some areas where there might be a need for an organization like the one that I created, and basically have gone through the last 28 years with highs and lows. You know, there are some times when things were like, maybe I should go get a corporate job. And those were very early on because you always have that, you know, is this the right thing for me to do? But something deep in my spirit continued to say, persevere, continue on. And so as I did that, there have been many highs. In 2006, we won the National Minority Supplier Development Council Supplier of the Year Award. So that was a real boost in terms of just the recognition for the work that we had done. There have been many, many other awards, but certainly the Lifetime Achievement Award is kind of one of those where you say that you're pleased to be recognized for your years of service. And so it wasn't just one or the other, it was years of service. You know, the journey's been one that I would tell any entrepreneur that really has a passion for this. And I always tell particularly younger people who are starting out, this your measurement should be, this is something I would do if I were independently wealthy and I'd do it for free. And that's always the way that I look at this to say, is this what I would be doing if I didn't need to work? And so then you know that it is your passion. It is something that you strongly believe in. And I've just seen the growth of a number of individuals, people who, you know, I brought in on as staff. I remember the first person I employed, I was like, oh my gosh, you know, now I have an employee. And then we moved it, you know, from one to many. We went from, you know, 15 to 50 overnight, but just really have had certainly a great experience in doing so. And if I had to do it all over again, I'd do it again.
Oh, that's wonderful. Wonderful. And you mentioned focusing on your passion. Is that how you've been able to maintain your longevity and success, or is it something else?
It really is that. It's believing in what you do makes a difference in someone's life. And whether that means an employee's life where, you know, they're able to feed their family, buy a home, do whatever, or whether it means for a client that they've got the aha moment that we brought a great idea and they trusted us with that great idea to be able to say, these are the kind of things that you need to do. It didn't hurt that I have a marketing background. So I will not deny that, because then I understand a lot of the landscape that individuals are going through when they're trying to determine what things do we do, what strategy and tactics should we bring in order to affect this change. And so because I have that background, I'm able to bring that forward more strategically and really get buy-in, you know, give our clients great ideas, something that's not the same cookie cutter. Oh yeah, we do it the same way all the time. And oh, this is what you need because we know it already. Some clients, you know, some clients are going to need media, some clients are not. And you just say, you know, I want to basically bring you a solution to a problem, because we're problem solvers. And that's really what we do at the end of the day. And it's just through marketing communications. And how do you respond to people? How do you talk to people? How do you communicate with them best to let them know that you really care about them and their outcome?
What do you think sets CMR Ignite apart from other agencies?
Probably the things that you mentioned earlier, our diversity in our staff. You know, we don't see that very often anywhere, because we intentionally and deliberately do that. We want to make sure that we're reflecting what America looks like. And again, as I mentioned, not only does our staff appreciate it, but our clients appreciate it. And so from setting us apart, I think that if I had to say, you know, what do our clients view as valuable, is that we do bring forth a view that they may not have seen before, because they're tending to get, you know, this is how we do this all the time from some other agency. But from our agency, you may get a little bit different view to say, well, you know, let's take into consideration what other audiences might view, the way that they might view this, versus the majority audience, you know, white audiences. You know, this is how they want to see this. And I'm like, well, but sometimes you need to look at how others are viewing that too. And then how do we get to a happy medium?
Tell me, what are you proudest of in your business?
Believe it or not, in 2023, I think I'm proudest that my two sons have joined the agency to keep the legacy moving forward. That was not my intention when I started the organization. As a matter of fact, I remember when they were much younger, they would say, you work too hard. And so my intent, you know, I just took from that they would never be a part of this organization, because they just felt like, and it was part of my passion. It wasn't because, well, perhaps it was because I worked too hard, but, you know, I was so passionate about it, I didn't view it that way. But it was good to let your children, you know, give you some perspective on, you know, you really work hard and this is not what we want to do. But they have evolved into, they have now become the ones who are really working hard. So I think if I had to say, you know, what am I proudest of at this point, is that they have found this to be something that they love as much as I love it. So from that standpoint, it really does mean a lot to me for them to continue the legacy moving forward of CMR.
On the flip side, as a Black woman, what are some of the challenges that you face in the corporate business world?
Oh my gosh. Probably got a long list of those, right? So, well, there've been many. You know, as I looked at this business very early on in 1995, there were not a lot of Black agencies out there, period, particularly Black woman-owned agencies. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for me, one of the early challenges was to demonstrate and almost prove that I was in the space where I was supposed to be. So it was really clawing my way to get there because, you know, you're constantly being told, well, you know, I don't know if we can do business with you because I'm not sure. I don't feel it in my gut. Those kinds of things that, you know, are the things that some people might get discouraged. But, you know, one of the things that I just continued to do was to believe in myself. I had a great supportive family. I had at the time I started the business, my mom was still living and she was always my biggest cheerleader for everything that I was doing. And so from a standpoint of looking at the number of challenges, again, it goes back to the supplier diversity hole and getting caught up in that and believing that, you know, because I was part of this group of certified people that, you know, that was kind of the end all. So just really learning how to navigate in a white world. And it really was very, very white at the time when I joined it. It has become somewhat more diverse. And I don't want to give the impression that we're anywhere near where we should be, because if you look at the major agencies that are still out there, they are still, you know, we're such a small percentage of the total agencies, period. But even the mega agencies, you know, there are very few agencies of color. And so, you know, just recognizing that, knowing that those things don't come overnight. So I didn't expect that they, you know, that it would be instant success, but really, you know, just getting an opportunity. And oftentimes people would meet us as a team, get to know us. They were fine. It's just, you know, getting that opportunity to meet people and helping them understand that we can bring great solutions that really impact your bottom line.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Given a chance.
Mm-hmm. That's chance. It. Just given the opportunity, you know, open the door. All you got to do is put a crack on that door and I can take it from there. And so, you know, we're not looking for handouts. None of the agencies, you know, none of the, you know, Black businesses, period. You know, this attitude of, well, you know, affirmative action or, you know, supplier diversity or certification or, you know, WBE programs, MBE programs are handouts. They are not. We're trying to level the playing field because it has been so lopsided for so long that, you know, we have to have those things to at least get us in the door. And oftentimes, you know, what I want to share is that much of our success has been in the federal government space. And it's because, believe it or not, the federal government tends to be a more diverse supplier of, you know, purchasing services, mm-hmm. goods and services, because there isn't a good old boys network, whatever. You know, you're merited on, you know, you send in a proposal, it's reviewed. And basically, if you've got the best proposal, you win the work.
Which is the way it should be anywhere.
Absolutely. But we know that oftentimes that's influenced by, well, these are my friends or, mm-hmm. You know, I know this person and this is the agency we've been working with all the time. So, you know, we're not going to change it now. It makes it really difficult for organizations like mine to thrive in that environment. But I've been very blessed to have friends in high places who are now introducing us to friends in high places. So that helps. But again, you know, that's taken 28 years.
Now, August is National Black Business Month. How do you celebrate that month, or do you? And really, do you think there is an importance in supporting Black-owned businesses?
Oh my gosh. Absolutely. I mean, whoa, we can talk a week on this. Absolutely. I think that unfortunately it's only 1 week. Sometimes we do it 1 month in the month of February where we support Black-owned businesses. But I encourage, you know, our listeners to think about, I can buy goods and purchases and the ice is just as cold. It really is. Okay. And I don't know how else to say it. It's, you know, it's somewhere there's a perception that, well, if I buy it from this organization, it isn't as good, you know, the quality. And I'm like, that is just so untrue and has no factual basis whatsoever. And so, you know, from that standpoint, you know, looking at, you know, whether or not we purchase goods and services, as I mentioned earlier, our firm always does it all the time. It is not a month. It is not a week. It is not, you know, we are actively looking for organizations who can provide goods and services to us. Now, we don't buy a lot of stuff because we don't need a lot of stuff. You know, our business is a professional services business. So oftentimes, you know, we're not purchasing big items. We don't have 50,000 employees, you know, so I would need to buy, you know, the goods and services for that. We don't have that need. But the things that we do purchase, we look to how can we seek out organizations who look like us, who okay. believe in what we okay. believe in.
Yeah, because that leads me to my next question. I was going to ask, you know, how do you all reach back to serve the Black community?
We help mentor, you know, like I have a number of individuals that I meet with to help mentor them because I know it's lonely at the top. And, you know, it's a place where, you know, oftentimes you're going to be discouraged. Oftentimes you're going to be told you're not as good, you know, whatever. And, you know, don't take that as face value. You can take constructive criticism, and that's a good thing. But, you know, when people are trying to discourage you from doing what you believe in, I just tell people to just continue to do it. You know, that today that might not be the one, but God has a plan. Mm-hmm. And if you've walked the way that you should walk in that plan, things will happen. And, you know, and no one can take your joy. No one can take that from you. And so from that standpoint, I've always believed in that no one can have my joy and no one can have the blessings that are meant for me.
And a lot of time you talked about taking constructive criticism. A lot of times you really do have to know that you're walking in your purpose or your mm-hmm. calling and not mm-hmm. let all these arrows and people's comments yep. affect you. You just Absolutely. Have to have that tunnel vision. Like, I know I'm doing what I'm mm-hmm. supposed to do. You mm-hmm. may not know it. But mm-hmm. I know.
And you just keep moving on. You know, you're gonna get those. Life isn't gonna be rosy, you know, all the time. And I mean, I try to help people understand, you know, you're gonna run into some rough times, you're gonna run into some bad situations, you're gonna run into some people who, you know, just want to tear you down. Just continue to believe in yourself and do what you have to do to, as you said, to walk in your purpose and right. knowing that there's those blessings are there. And it's just a matter of time.
So as we wrap this up, I do want to ask, what do you hope to see for the future of your company?
Well, you know, I when I started the business, I didn't start it from a standpoint of looking at the organization and saying, you know, oh, one day I hope to be a 500 employee company. That has never been my desire. I've always, you know, wanted to keep a very friendly environment, an environment where I know everybody's name, because I believe that that's important in terms of relationships. So as I look at the future of our organization, I want us to, you know, remain true to who we are, continue to serve the African-American community, you know, as individuals in business. And so, you know, we want to continue to make sure that we're serving from that standpoint. And my hope is that we will just continue to be one of the largest African-American agencies in the U.S. So that, you know, we can continue to help others partner with perhaps smaller organizations as we move forward. So that's kind of where I see us, you know, in the future, not straying a lot from where we are now, because we like who we are. And so, you know, so that's a good thing, you know, around what do we look like? You know, what does our staff look like? We've got, in my opinion, you know, a staff of the greatest individuals that there are. And I just You know, I look at people sometimes, and, you know, one story was shared with us around an individual who, you know, had applied in another company, and, you know, they kind of told him, well, we're not sure. And I'm like, oh, that was their loss, but we are so glad that you are here with us, because the people are just doing phenomenal things to just make a difference and to, you know, allow us to rise to the occasion that we have. And the reason that we're getting to the Inc. 5000s and the awards that we get is because we are being recognized for the work that we do. And that comes through the people that we hire. And so, you know, we are just so proud of all the individuals who are on board with us, who believe in our mission, want to do the best that they can do, you know, to serve our clients. So we're just really pleased with that. And we will continue to do that because that is who we are.
Oh, I love that. Love that. And much continued success to you, Jackie.
Thank you.
I appreciate you joining me.
Absolutely. You are so welcome. And thank you for allowing us to just share, you know, these tidbits of information. Hopefully I can inspire someone, you know, that might not be feeling so high today. You know, some on those days when you have lows, you just need to hear somebody else has been through this, you know, and I can do it too.
Well, that'll do it for another episode of Diversity Discourse. I thank you all for joining us. And as I always say, I'll see you in the pages.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Diversity Discourse, the official podcast of Minority Business Entrepreneur Magazine. We hope you enjoyed it. Please be sure to subscribe so that we can join you again. For more tips and notes from the show, check us out at mbemag.com. And to find out which guests and topics we'll be discussing next, sign up for our newsletter at mbemag.com/pulse. That's mbemag.com/pulse. We'll talk to you next time.